back in Manitoba many moons ago.
There's that music signaling the appearance of the Weekend Morning Show's rock star historian Gordon Goldsboro with a tale to tell. And he's with me now. Good morning.
Good morning, Lori.
So, Gordon, last week we talked about Fort Ellis, which is not on Ellis Avenue.
Nope.
Surprisingly, it's near St. Lazare.
Out in western Manitoba. Mm-hmm.
And last week you gave us a hint about what would seem to be a very fascinating topic, a drainage ditch in Transcona.
Yes. Of course, it seems a little innocuous that you would think anything significant about a drainage ditch.
Just
but
a bit.
I think it relates to what that ditch was used for.
Okay.
Because, in fact, during the Second World War, it drained wastewater from a vast manufacturing facility that existed at that site where they made explosives.
Oh, never heard of that, but that's not too surprising, really.
Well, in fact, the ditch actually has a formal name. People may know of the Cordite Ditch.
Oh, cordite like guns. Old
that's
guns?
Right. Yeah, well, see, cordite is a material that was invented in the late 1800s as a replacement for gunpowder. The idea was that it was smokeless. I guess it was a little bit safer, perhaps. And over the years, they developed it and used it in a variety of applications, particularly things like rifle shells, tank shells, artillery. Anytime you needed a propellant to push the bullet forward, they would use things like cordite.
And why Transcona?
Well, there's various reasons, I suppose. I think one of the reasons was that at that time, when the war was on, that Transcona was still a fairly remote place relative to Winnipeg. Of course, Winnipeg has kind of grown out and kind of completely enveloped the area now. But at that time, it was still fairly remote. Even today, though, the site of this facility is actually just outside Winnipeg. It's just beyond the Red River floodway. And I think that was part of the appeal, that if you're going to make explosives, you don't want to do it right in downtown Winnipeg, where if there was a disaster, it could take out a whole city block.
That's good corporate thinking, I would say.
Precisely. But that was only just one of the advantages of the site here. One of them, say, was the locale. But there was also a lot of power available. We had, of course, hydropower in abundance. They needed that for the manufacturing process. We have lots of fresh water, of course. They have good railway facilities. We're here at the center of several major railways here in Winnipeg. They had lots of cheap labor. And they had access, apparently, because of the mines in northern Manitoba where they mined sulfur-bearing rock, they could get access to sulfuric acid, which they needed for the manufacture of cordite.
Oh, okay. I was going to ask if there was like a thick vein of cordite running through Transcona or something, but
well,
that wasn't the case.
And it does sound like a kind of a mineral that you would mine, but it's actually made from a variety of materials. The two major ingredients are nitroglycerin, which is explosive, and a material called nitrocellulose, or sometimes called gun cotton. And it's kind of a fluffy material, kind of looks like cotton, but it too has sort of explosive properties. And these together would be mixed and made sort of a, well, in the final product, the cordite looked kind of like brown twine. It was sort of long and thread-like, and they would pack it into boxes and ship it off, and then it would be manufactured into projectiles to make, you know, bullets and bombs and things like that.
So what was the cordite factory actually like?
Well, it was a very large area. Because of the possibility of an explosion, they were really mindful of that, so they purposely spread out. It was over 800 acres, so it was more than a square mile in area. And there's not many pictures of it left, but the pictures I've seen show buildings strewn way out. I mean, none of the buildings are beside any other building.
Like they've already exploded.
Well, it almost looks that way. I guess it's because then if one building explodes, it's not going to chain reaction and blow up all the rest of them. So they're all real spread out. They had railway lines running between the buildings because they had to transport the raw materials and the finished products between buildings. The buildings were fairly modest. I think they thought at the time that, of course, the war wasn't thought to be going on forever, so they didn't want to put a lot of money into building buildings that would be there in perpetuity. So they purposely built them kind of modest and low. They were made out of wood for the most part. One story, there was only one building, I'm told, that was taller. It was, I think a three-story building at the center of it all. But otherwise, the buildings were fairly modest.
Lots of people employed?
Oh, incredible. At the height of it, I'm told that they had over 4,000 employees at this site.
And did it ever blow up good?
No, no, no. I think it would have been probably better known if it had. What I've only been able to learn of one accident they had, that in fact at one point they piled cordite too tall, and apparently that caused a spark, and that in turn caused an explosion. But the remarkable thing in all that was that only one person was killed, and so in the entire history there was apparently over 11,000 people that went through that facility over the course of just the 4 years that it operated. It was only 4 years that it ran. 11,000 people, only one fatality, which is pretty impressive.
Well, it's because those buildings were sprinkled over 800 acres or whatever it was. So it wasn't the blown up truck that caused its demise then, obviously.
No, it wasn't. Nope. It was the end of the Second World War. Mm-hmm. And of course, once the war ends, you don't need explosives anymore. The local municipality wanted to see if they could find some other use for the site. They thought, well, it's a manufacturing facility. You know, maybe we can do something with that. But a lot of the buildings, they thought, were too thoroughly impregnated with nitroglycerin. They were worried that they might be continued to be, you know, dangerous. And so they felt that the best thing they could do was to demolish them. So virtually all of the buildings in the span of about 2 to 3 years were torn down. They did salvage quite a bit of parts from them. They took out windows and doors and lumber and things. And in fact, at the University of Manitoba down in Fort Garry, they actually built what they called the Veterans Village for returning Second World War veterans. They needed buildings for them to live in while they were attending university. So they used some of the parts from these former factory buildings to build these buildings at the university.
Were they full of nitroglycerin?
Well, I would imagine they weren't, because why else would they just take them from one place to another and then, you know, blow up the veterans?
Seems wrong, yeah.
Yeah, but no, I'm told that they were quite safe by that point. But everything was torn down by the time that about 1948 rolled around. So today, there's not a whole lot left at the site.
Nothing?
Well, not nothing. I mean, there has to be, to my mind, something, or I wouldn't have been interested in it. There is a wee bit of fence along the outside. They used to have a perimeter fence that would keep trespassers out. They had a sign on it saying, you know, armed guards, beware. And there's a portion of that fence still standing. You can see that. If you zoom in on a satellite photo of the area, you can still see the rail lines that are crisscrossing the site. You can still see the outlines of what are probably buildings. And then if you go down on the ground, there actually are concrete foundations left from some of the buildings where I'm told they used to mix the cordite to make it ready for delivery.
Fascinating as always. Thanks very much, Gordon.
You're welcome.
And next week, Terry will be back, and but I'll pass along the clue.
Yes. For next week's site, to visit it, you will need a passport.
But this is Abandoned Manitoba.
Yes, indeed.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome, Lorraine.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
No matter where I go, every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba, many moons.